Now joining us, the man who has just broken hockey Twitter, it is Chris Johnston. What's going on, CJ?
I'm glad it's not my fault. Don't shoot the messenger.
No, I know, but you know, this is a pretty massive story you've just broken here. I guess it was all kind of lingering in the back of our minds, but now we have a little bit more clarity on what's taken so long to figure out this return to play.
Right. I mean, I think a lot of people and a lot of the way this has been framed and discussed is that the league and the players are trying to come up with agreements on, you know, what this next season will look like. But the reality is the governments are probably even more important in those discussions. You know, I think the league and the players are aligned on a lot of issues that maybe the governments themselves haven't, you know, signed off on or you know, agreed with what the plans are for the league. And so, you know, it's hard to say at this point where this one goes. You know, certainly it's not a signal that all the Canadian teams are going to the U.S. I know there's still ongoing discussions with all the provincial authorities. But, you know, time is of the essence. And I do think if there comes a point where either there's just not going to be a fit, where they're not going to be able to satisfy the type of protocols or what's needed that the government requires, then they do have a plan B now. Formulating, and there was a call this afternoon with the Canadian teams and the league's head office to start discussing some of these things about, you know, moving the Canadian teams down to the U.S. And obviously that would be the death of the Canadian division before it ever even got off the ground.
Yeah, we had all our lists and our debate, and it may not even happen, CJ. We've been cranking out the content. But is January 13th still that date, or what does this do to the date?
I think the date is actually pretty flexible from the league's end. I mean, obviously, it's good to work towards a goal and a target, and January 13th certainly has been that date. I mean, in fact, in the last week or so, it's been sort of January 13th or January 16th, which is a Saturday. The 13th is a Wednesday, you know, kind of typical days of the week you might see an NHL season start. But I do think that as each hour passes, it's becoming a little bit less likely that they're going to be able to resolve all of the issues, you know, which still includes formalizing the health protocols and the transition rules with the Players Association, getting the Board of Governors to vote on it, getting the NHLPA's executive board to go vote on it, having, you know, five layers of provincial governments sign off on, you know, what this plan is going to look like. You know, there's just a lot of hurdles here. And let's not forget that COVID itself is, you know, an ongoing issue. It's a real living thing. The conditions change from, you know, what the league might have thought on November 10th to December 10th. And I think we should ration that forward that, you know, 2 weeks after Christmas time, you know, when I know a lot of people are being told to stay home, but may not follow those orders, that, you know, I think it's reasonable to think that we might still see a spike at despite numbers really across the country that have been higher than at any other previous point during the pandemic. So, you know, there's a lot going on here. And I do think it points us to a start that's going to be a little later than mid-January. But, you know, I don't know that that's really the front burner issue for the league. I don't think that they're as focused entirely on when they're starting as how they're starting and what it looks like. And, you know, obviously getting this issue resolved one way or another with seven Canadian teams is very much on the front burner, because the league looks pretty different if you've got seven teams based in cities in Canada traveling within the country playing each other, or if you've now got to find homes for each of those south of the border.
Is this why bubbles have still not been, you know, the idea of going back into some hubs or bubbles, it's not been put to bed yet?
I would say so. You know, also in the U.S. too. I mean, the San Jose Sharks aren't going to be able to open training camp in San Jose. They're going to be in Scottsdale, Arizona. So, you know, these issues are more pronounced here, I would say, with the Canadian teams, but they also affect teams in the U.S. And it's conceivable or entirely possible that health restrictions or lockdowns might occur in other parts of the U.S. that affect NHL teams between even now and the start of this mythical season. So, you know, bubbles, I think, are seen certainly as kind of a last case resort. You know, it's not favored either by the players who, you know, I don't think had a great experience on whole in the bubbles in the summertime, or the owners who, you know, have to incur even more cost than it would take to run the season out of their own arenas if they go back to a bubble model. But there is an understanding, and I think, you know, some of the guidance the league's got from medical experts that it might have to do them on at least a temporary basis. And, you know, I think it's relevant here to the Canadian discussion because, you know, what I've heard from my sources is that, you know, one of the things the government has said to the league in some form or another is, we really like the bubbles you did in the summer. I mean, that worked well. That protected public health. You know, there wasn't one positive test out of the 33,000 you did. And you know, the league has countered that it's just not feasible to do that over the course of an entire regular season. And so bubbles are an interesting issue, that they're very much here and relevant. You know, the league, all things being equal, does not want to have bubbles again. But I think that there's an acknowledgement that even if it's just for a portion of the season, or maybe in a specific location like Canada, you know, or another region, they might have to use them in order to get the season up and running.
Absolutely. And we heard from players after their availabilities in the playoffs, where they said, for the playoffs, it's fine, but if we have to do this for the regular season, it's something to think about. Are we going to see more opt-outs potentially this year as well? This health situation is far from being over. From what you're hearing from players, is this still up in the air for a lot of them?
Oh, I'm sure it is. You know, and it's hard for them to make that decision because they only have partial information right now. I mean, there's calls with the NHLPA updating everyone on you know, where the talks are at and some of the things being discussed. But until you have the exact season format in front of you, it's hard to make that kind of call. But I think certainly we'll see opt-outs. Obviously, there was a few in the summertime. We've seen them in the other sports. You know, it's an individual decision for guys. But, you know, I do think that, you know, especially for those later in their careers, it's going to be a decision. I mean, I think that probably the main reason that Daniel Chara is an unrestricted free agent today is he wants to know what this season is like before he signs on for another year. He wants to get a feel for what it looks like, where he'll be playing, how much time he'd have to be away from his family before deciding to do that. I mean, we saw Matt Niskanen, you know, somewhat surprisingly retire and leave a fair bit of money on the table this summer because, you know, after going through the bubble with the Philadelphia Flyers, he just said, you know what, I'm good. You know, I've had a really good career. That was a difficult experience. We don't know what the future holds. I've made enough money. I'm happy with where things are at. And while these are sort of isolated cases as opposed to trends, you know, I do think that it's reasonable to think we're going to have more isolated cases again as the players get a full picture of what the season's going to be.
Is this issue now with the Canadian teams the thing that's keeping Gary Bettman up the most at night right now?
I don't even know if he's slept in 9 months. Like, to do all this, and look, all the leagues are dealing with it, but I think the NHL, with having so many teams in Canada, has probably had more logistical headaches than any of the leagues in pulling off anything it's done, just because it is dealing with so many different layers of provincial governments, you know, because the provinces handle health and are responsible for these decisions. And, you know, this is probably one of a dozen things keeping them up. And I'm sure 10 of those items we don't even know about. I mean, we're only skimming the surface a lot of the times with the scope of the discussions. I mean, you know, it's not going to get anyone too excited, but I think some of the toughest decisions that the league and the PA have to make when it comes to this return to play document is just how the rules work. How are waivers going to work between expanded rosters and you know, having these you know, taxi squads? How will it happen? Will a player be given a full season credit, which, you know, carries importance under the CBA? For how many games does he have to play? I mean, there's so many aspects to this. And, you know, I think against it all, you know, we're getting here to December 17th. The NBA is supposed to play regular season games in less than a week. And the NHL still hasn't been able to finalize a plan. So, you know, I think that what's going on and sort of the status of discussions with the Canadian governments is, you know, causing some headaches at league office. But, you know, there's other things that are probably driving them to reach for an aspirin as well.
Yeah, and revenue is definitely one of those things as well. We've heard Elliot Friedman, of course, write about ads on helmets. Is this thing a lock, or is that discussion still going on, Chris?
Well, it hasn't been finalized, but I would suggest to you it's a lock. You know, it's not 100% done, but it's 95% of the way down the road. And you know, what's interesting about the ads on helmets to me is that, you know, this is a way in the short term for the league to make good on some sponsorship deals that it's had with clients that, you know, for whatever reason, it hasn't been able to satisfy, whether that's, you know, having a naming rights on a building, but you're not playing in that building, so they're not getting the pump up that way, or other things. And to me, you know, you do that for one season, you get a read on what the level of interest is, how it resonates with fans. You know, I'm sure they have metrics to measure, you know, how effective these ads are in terms of, you know, getting in people's minds. And then, you know, it's something to sell down the road. I believe it's only a matter of time before we're seeing ads on the sweaters as well. I know it's not going to happen for this coming season, but you know, it's just another revenue source that's worked in the NBA. It's been quite lucrative especially for some of the more glamour teams in the NBA. And, you know, coming out of the pandemic, I think we're all kind of aware that we might have to sort of reimagine how things go in the league. And these are two sort of things that pop to mind, but I think that will apply to a lot of different reasoning and logic as they find ways to grow the business, to reach new fans. I mean, this has been a massive disruption in all our lives, but there's opportunity in there. And I think some of the immediate opportunity that they're going to seize on is these new ad revenue chances. But there's going to be much more than that, coming down the pipe.
It was tough to hear the news on Henrik Lundqvist today, the heart condition, having him put his career on hold for now. We know he's such a great goalie, but I think the thing about Henrik is just what a great ambassador he's been for the game for so many years.
Yeah, he's one of the real NHL stars that sort of crossed the lines beyond the sport. And, you know, especially in the U.S., that's difficult. I mean, these guys get a lot more attention, especially those that are stars in Canada, because, you know, I think on whole, our country has a bit more affinity for the sport. It's more deep-rooted in who we are and what we are. And so the athletes are able to cross over. But, you know, for a time there, I think Henrik Lundqvist was one of the biggest athletes playing in all of New York. And that's, you know, the world's biggest sports media market. And you're right. I think he was basically top class in any way you measure it in terms of his play, especially at his pinnacle. I know he didn't quite win a Stanley Cup, but he did basically everything other than that, including helping Sweden win the Olympic gold medal in 2006. He was someone who treated everyone with class and certainly never had any PR issues or anything of that nature. I think he just really is a quality guy. And you know, I think he carried put the sport in front of more people than it otherwise would have got to. So, you know, obviously we wish him well. And you know, we don't know if his career is over, but I think we have to kind of assume that given his age and the nature of his condition. And, you know, just thankfully he's able to walk away with his health and, you know, being able to get treatment for whatever his condition is, and that it's not under worse circumstances that we found this out in another way.
CJ, really appreciate you making time after you broke hockey Twitter. Fantastic reporting on this, and we appreciate all your help this year. Have a happy holidays.
Same to you guys. We'll talk soon.